Let's begin.
This is the boss.
I'm the boss.
And the gloss.
My lip gloss, I only rock clear.
On SB Nation Radio.
And SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way. Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios. O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Here are your hosts, David Gao and Carla Dawson.
I got that sunshine in my pocket. You got that good soul.
Good evening out there, SB Nation Radio listeners. Craig Koshkin sitting in for Mr. Gao. I can't call him David Gao. I can't do it.
I sympathize.
I physically cannot do it. Maybe if I was like full time, I could possibly do it. Andrew Carlson behind the glass sitting in as well. You're going to have a good night. Got a lot to talk about, everything going on in the world of sports. Obviously, Colin Kaepernick had a little workout this weekend. He's still not going to get signed by anyone. That should not be a surprise to anyone either. And there's a couple of reasons for that, which I'll lay out later in the show. Plenty of NFL action from yesterday. The Texans laying another egg in another big game under Bill O'Brien. They are now one in about a century mark in games that are super meaningful to whether it be the narrative about what their season's going to be or for playoff positioning or whatever it is. Anytime the Texans are in a place to really improve the perception of what they are as a club, they lay an egg. Except for against a hobbled Pat Mahomes earlier in the season. It's about the only time they've ever gotten it done. Plenty of other stories going around. Does anybody want to win the NFC East? It doesn't seem like it with the way teams are playing there. We've got Monday Night Football about to kick off from Mexico City. Someone kicked a 71-yard field goal in warmups. That Azteca. Is this the only time an American football team can win in Azteca? I mean, granted, the U.S. soccer team's done it once, ever.
Given the current state of U.S. soccer, oh, I would probably say so.
Hey, they won 4-1 against Canada over the weekend.
Should I give them congratulations for that? After they lost to Canada for the first time in over three decades?
I mean, that streaks are meant to be broken at some point, right? Hey, Serginho Dest declared for the United States. That's all that matters. That is all that matters. We've got a whole lot to get into. We hadn't even talked about Tua Tagovailoa. Hadn't even talked about the college football playoff, anything else. We'll get into all that over the next 2 hours. Thank you for spending your Monday night with us. This is SB Nation Radio.
This is The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back in to SB Nation Radio. Craig Koshkin sitting in on a Monday nights, 8:12 p.m. Eastern, wherever you are. That time may be different because time zones exist. Before we get into all the NFL action going on that went on yesterday, I just had a thought. I was watching pregame warmups in Mexico City, and Andrew, I want to throw this off you. So it's clear that the NFL is determined to put a team in London at some point in time. And look, when they have the games in London, they sell out. There's a lot of fanfare, but there's no general support for any one team that's ever there. You know, a lot of the guys on our local side went when the Texans were in London earlier this year, a couple weeks ago, and said they went through and they saw pretty much all 32 jerseys represented in the stands and just general fans of the game. So while there is fanfare there, I wonder why they don't strongly consider just using Mexico City, because the fanfare would be just as great and the travel and the logistics and everything works so much better putting it in Mexico City than it would be there. Now, there's maybe some security issues that you would worry about, and that's probably a legitimate concern. But I think the reason why they do this is because they want all day Sunday. And when you have those games in London, that means you get from 8 p.m. till 8 a.m. till midnight of back-to-back, of nonstop football. That's the reason you take London. I just thought that was interesting because from a money standpoint, there's no question they could do just as well in Mexico City as they could do in London. No doubt in my mind. So, I don't know. I just wanted to bounce that.
No, that's something I honestly hadn't thought about at all. And I think that London is clearly the end goal for what they want to do internationally. Even though logistically, if you think about it,
it's a nightmare.
What if the London team makes the playoffs? What are you doing then?
Yeah, no, I think that's a fair question. The only logical solution to, like, the regular season that I heard was whenever you if you're going to go overseas, is to actually have four teams overseas, and when you go to play one of them, you just stay there for the month and you go play all four of them. And even that just sounds horrendous. That just sounds so awful because – on the bookends of that, you've got to get adjusted to the time zones there on the first game. And then when you come back, you'd probably get a bye, but you'd have to get adjusted on the other side. It's just a bad idea. London just doesn't work. It's about as bad an idea as NFL Europe was. Even though it gave us – was Kurt Warner an NFL Europe guy?
I believe so, for a limited amount of time, yes.
He played for like the Rhine Fire or something. That's the only team I remember from NFL Europe. I think they won the championship like every single year. But yesterday was obviously an NFL Sunday, kind of a weak slate of games for the most part. I mean, you had a lot of divisional matchups, but you had games like the Jets traveling to D.C. to play the Washington Redskins. And the most interesting thing to come out of that, other than Sam Darnold's four touchdown passes, was Dwayne Haskins pleading on the sidelines with his offensive line, like, what do you need for me to – and offensive line just basically ignoring him the entire time. And that – I don't think that speaks anything ill of Dwayne Haskins. I think that just speaks to the apathy that Dan Snyder has allowed to build with the Redskins organization. Like, it's clear he doesn't care about winning. So why does – it trickles down. Why does anyone else care about winning?
Fans don't even care anymore.
No, they don't care. The Redskins, a once proud – NFL franchise, pretty much the second they decided to treat RG3 like he was Wolverine from the X-Men and could regenerate from any injury instantly, they've just been a joke. And it's actually dates back to when Dan Snyder bought the team. And I think he bought it in 99 is when he bought it. But either way, that's really when the downfall came. And it's just a joke to see what that franchise is. Dwayne Haskins clearly needs a lot of work, and he's literally in the worst franchise to get the necessary help to become quiet. There's also some throws he made in that game that were NFL throws. He said, yep, it's not like a guy who I'm pretty much out on in Mitch Trubisky, who, like, I'm not sure the tools are even there. Dwayne Haskins has the tools, but are we going to – As an organization, are the Redskins going to put him in a position to actually develop those tools? And I think anyone who has watched the Redskins over the last decade plus can honestly say absolutely not. There's no chance at that. New Orleans gets a good bounce back win on the road at Tampa Bay, doubling them up 34-17. Minnesota, the Denver Broncos aren't going to confuse anybody with a playoff caliber team. But the amount of one-possession games, I believe the number's up to four now, one-possession games they've lost, where they held a lead in the fourth quarter, is insane. So that's a sneakier game than you want. But if you're waiting for the Vikings to be the team that kind of turns the corner and becomes a Super Bowl contender, especially with the questions Kirk Cousins has had for some time as far as his ability to play in big games, that's a game you hope to win by more than 4 points. It's a good win. You're glad you didn't lose it, but and you know Dalvin Cook's not going to really get going against that front seven either. You would hope to be a little better, but most importantly, get the win. Buffalo kind of enhances their standing as one of the wild card favorites with a big win over the hapless Dolphins. Indianapolis gets a big 20-point victory at home against the Jacksonville Jaguars, and that door you're hearing shut might be the Texans' chances at winning the division after that big loss. Now, they get Indianapolis at home on short week this Thursday, and that game changes everything. That game could change the entire perception, to be fair. But right now, that door isn't closed, it's just starting to eke shut a little bit. Whereas when they were coming, they won in the bye the week before the bye, coming off the bye, you expect them to be the team that is opening that door that's about to come crashing through. I mean, a lot of people were putting maybe some undue favoritism towards the Texans. I've been in Houston long enough. I just don't see it with the Bill O'Brien coach Texans team. You can give me Deshaun Watson all you want. Deshaun Watson's phenomenal. DeAndre Hopkins, great. Duke Johnson and Carlos Hyde have been revelations at the running back position for this. The offensive line is still a joke. And trading away the entire future for a piece of Laremy Tunsil. Laremy Tunsil's a nice piece at left tackle, but trading everything for him as if he were the singular piece missing from a Super Bowl franchise. Stop. Just like, let's not be silly about all this. The Texans are a playoff. They're capable of winning a mediocre division. They're capable of getting a wild card in the AFC. They're not much better than that. You give them a home playoff game, they might win. They're not going to get to the AFC Championship game. They're not beating a healthy Pat Mahomes in Kansas City. Sorry, they're not. They're going to beat the Patriots? Well, we'll see in a couple weeks because they play the Patriots, I think, after Indianapolis. It might be the game after. No, it is. It's the game after Indianapolis. That's right. So they will. So we'll see that. And let me just give you, if you're a Texans fan out there, let me give you a sneak preview. No, that's your sneak preview. That's not happening. Dallas Cowboys get a win in which they let Jeff Driscoll pass all over their defense. That team has so many questions. If you are Jerry Jones, look, I get it. I actually applaud Jerry Jones for trying to build some consistency with the Cowboys. He's kind of taking the Steelers model a little bit, not firing head coaches just because of one. But at some point, you've got to let Jason Garrett go, right? Like, it's pretty clear the players don't care for him. It's pretty clear that they've kind of maxed out at what they can do with Jason Garrett. I've been saying this for about 18 months now. Lincoln Riley is going to be your next Dallas Cowboys head coach. That's my firm belief. That's just what I think is going to happen. Atlanta gets a huge win over Carolina, 29-3. The Texans laid an egg, I talked about in the onset of the show, 41-7. There was an element of that game I want to discuss later about the referees and pass interference challenges. No, it didn't change the outcome of the game. No, nothing would have been different. That doesn't mean the refs get a pass on being bad at their job. Except they do, because the NFL doesn't ever punish refs for being bad at their job. San Francisco gets a 10-point win that was really in doubt until about the last 45 seconds yesterday, 36-26 over Arizona, and New England tops the Philadelphia Eagles, who keep claiming they want to win the NFC East but can't come up with big wins. And Nelson Agholor might want to start looking for real estate somewhere else. He cannot keep dropping the ball literally in big spots. And then Oakland gets a 17-10 win over Cincinnati. That's a bad win. If you're Oakland. Oakland has been a team that's kind of played above expectations this year. You have got to beat the Cincinnati Bengals worse than by a touchdown, especially at home. Also, LA gets rid of the Bears 17-7 last night on Sunday Night Football. Bad game from Jared Goff. Not a very good game from the Rams as a whole. But victories are what's important if they want to stay alive in the wild card. They're certainly not winning that NFC West division. So at 6-4, I think they're a game out. We'll see how they go. They ran the ball better. They committed to Gurley a little bit more. Even Malcolm Brown and some backup reps looked pretty good running the ball. That offensive line picked it up against a very good Bears front. So, I mean, people were talking about the Bears being an all-time front very early in the season. So, see how that's turned out for them. Not very well. Sorry, Chicago. Yeah. When we come back, we are going to take a look at some things that happened around the college football world this weekend. Thanks for spending your time with us. This is SB Nation Radio.
You're listening to The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Improve visibility and save money at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Stop by for their See Better, Drive Safer sale, where you can earn a $15 gift card after mail-in rebate when you purchase either Sylvania headlight bulbs or Bosch Focus or Trico Titan wiper blades. They'll even install your wiper blades for free while you wait. Don't risk your safety because of poor visibility. Let the professional parts people at O'Reilly help you find just what you need. Craig Koshkin sitting in for Mr. Gal here on a Monday evening as Monday Night Football has gotten underway. The Chargers convert their opening drive. They scores 3-0 as Kansas City is about to start their first drive of the evening. We've got some NBA action as well. The Rockets up early. Up early over the Portland Trail Blazers. That should be a fun one here in Houston tonight. See how that one plays out as they get going. Still in the first quarter, as far as I can tell, my eyes.
You're right. First quarter.
3 minutes left. Okay. Yep. Now, okay. I'm just wondering. That's awfully low scoring of that second quarter with 3 minutes left. That doesn't make sense. So a lot of that going on. But I want to get into the college football weekend, and I think the big story coming out of the weekend is what happened to Tua Tagovailoa. If you didn't see it, he was hurt on a play where allegedly he convinced Nick Saban to keep him in when it was 35-7, when Nick Saban was ready to pull him. I don't really care about the minutia in that, but here is the play that ultimately ended Tagovailoa's season.
When will Tua check out for the afternoon? Bama's had 5 possessions, 5 touchdowns. And looking for more in the final 3 minutes of this first half. Comes out throwing. On the run. Pressure from behind. And that's where Nick Saban is thinking with Mac Jones.
He's down. And Tua's down.
Man, that's a tough one. That is a real tough one to see. You know, people, I've seen both sides of it. People say, well, the player campaigned his way back in. You should blame him. And a lot of people saying coaches are there to protect the players. It's their job. You got to blame Nick Saban on this one. Can't freak accidents just be freak accidents? Look, if Nick Saban was going to pull him anyway, yes, he probably should have stuck with his plan and just said, sorry, Tua, I know you want to play, but you've got to come out. You're already hurt with an ankle injury. You weren't 100% against LSU. Let's just let you rest a little more. We're clearly going to win this game. Yes, Nick Saban should have done that. I'm not going to blame Tua for anything. Things happen. I think the worst thing that came out of this story, Andrew, was all of the speculation on Twitter and social media. I saw so many people say, oh, my goodness, this is Bo Jackson all over again. His career's over. Oh, my God. I even saw an actual doctor try and diagnose it from just the play and said, uh-oh, his life is in danger. They better pop that hip back into place right now, or it's going to cut off blood flow to something, and he could die from this. And as it turns out, they just kind of they take him to the hospital immediately. They fly him back to Birmingham. He flew to Houston to have surgery today. And basically, I didn't see the timetable for his rehab and all that, but basically they've just said he's going to be just fine.
It's like medicine has advanced a little bit since Bo Jackson had his injury, right?
It's almost just a little bit, and it's, as we've found out, not even the same injury. And a big reason why Bo Jackson's career did end is because he had the injury much earlier and continued to play on it. And stop with the speculation. I could get into this with the whole Astros scandal. I'm tired of seeing speculation. Look, I get it. We live in instant news, instant gratification society. You want to know what happened now. And we have more avenues than ever to figure these things out. But when you report things as if you know for sure when all you're doing is guessing, even if you have a 95% likelihood, unless you are there at the, unless the Alabama team doctor is right there tweeting it out, I don't care what you have to say from your couch in Piscataway, New Jersey. I don't care. There's a reason why you're on your couch and not on the field in They weren't. Were they in Tuscaloosa? Either way, it doesn't matter. Wherever they are.
Starksville.
They're at Mississippi State. So they were in Starkville, Mississippi. Frankly, if you're a doctor in Starkville, Mississippi, I don't want your opinion on it either. There's a reason why they took him straight to Birmingham and then straight to Houston. I don't know if you heard, we have a pretty good med center here. Just one of those things. But I'm so sick of all the speculation. And I'm also sick of all the blaming. Also, yes, it was preventable and they just pulled two of there. Yeah, 100%. But we're dealing in hindsight here. If you want to deal in hindsight, that means we get to deal in what-ifs too. What if Tua went down the field and made a spectacular Heisman-worthy play and scored? They got another touchdown out of it, and that's the moment he wins a Heisman Trophy and becomes the definitive number one overall pick in next year's NFL draft, netting him millions upon millions of dollars, rather than the speculation of, could Joe Burrow be number one? What about Jake Fromm? What about Jacob Eason in Washington? What about anybody? So I get it. We want to blame somebody for everything that happens. Football's a violent game. It was an unfortunate tackle that ended the young man's season. So far as we know, not his career. He will have either the opportunity to go to the NFL draft this year and let chips fall where they may, given his injury, and get drafted. He also may have avoided going to Miami. Knock on wood if you're Tua Tagovailoa on that one. Or he comes back next year. And he wins the Heisman, maybe. And he wins Alabama another national championship, maybe. And he's the number one overall pick again. Whatever is going to happen is going to happen with this. I know that sounds very John Madden-ish. It's just the way it is. Let's stop sitting here trying to blame someone. He's in the situation he is. And by all means, all the reports on who he is as a young man is he is going to fight through this. He's going to do all his rehab. And if rehab says he's 8 months away from playing football again, he'll probably be ready in six. Because that's who he is, alleged. I mean, I've never met the young man, but that's what everyone who's ever met him says he is as a competitor, as someone who perseveres through tough times, as just a person. He's a fighter. And he's going to be hopefully fine. And if he's not, if he never plays football again, God forbid that happens. But if he ever plays football, never plays football again, he's going to get a free education from the University of Alabama. And he's going to go be a coach somewhere, or he's going to go have a very lucrative career doing something else. Because once again, that's the type of young man he is. Supposedly. That's what we're told. That's the type of young man he is. So stop sitting here trying to... It's terrible. I feel for the young man. I promise you this. I guarantee you he doesn't blame Nick Saban one bit for his injury. I guarantee you he doesn't blame anyone. He probably looks at it as like, this is football. It happens. He's not happy about it. It's terrible for him. He's probably not very happy right now. But he knows he's going to come back one way or the other, whether it's in an NFL uniform or an Alabama uniform. Doesn't matter. The only person who might be mad is some freshman or sophomore quarterback who thinks, oh, now I got to wait one more year, even though they're going to play the rest of this year. So just when you look at Tua's situation, stop looking for someone to blame. Just stop it. It's bad. It happened. His career's not over. He's going to have a chance to play again. Everyone hold your breath. Relax. No, don't hold your breath. Take a deep breath. Relax. He'll be fine. On the other side, we continue with the college football talk. Thank you for spending your Monday night with us. This is SB Nation Radio.
This is the Boss and the Gloss
on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Craig Koshkin sitting in for Mr. Gao and Miss Dawson this Monday night. Miss Dawson, I said Dawson. Don't know what I was thinking. Miss Dawson here on a Monday night. There's a game going on in Azteca Stadium in Mexico City between the Chargers and the Kansas City Chiefs. Our very own Darren Smith is on the scene. Darren, welcome into the program. What's going on in Mexico City?
Oh, not much. It is extremely loud, so you have to forgive me right now. The Chiefs just had a penalty. There was a 40-yard missed field goal by the L.A. Chargers, 37 left to go in the first quarter. Chiefs, they had their first drive stalled. Patrick Mahomes only 1 out of 5 for 11 yards. And David Williams had 1 attempt for 3 yards. Chiefs right now seem to not be able to stop the running game, which has been their downfall all season. Melvin Gordon already has 37 yards on 6 attempts. Phillip Rivers 5 out of 6 with 66 yards passing thus far. Of course, it is loud. It is rockets out here in Estadio Azteca Stadium in Mexico City. Look, high-tide football is alive and well down here in Mexico. There's about 75,000 of my closest friends and family down here. And so I'm looking forward to bringing you all more updates later on tonight.
Thanks, Darren. Really appreciate it. Man, I've never been to Mexico City, but I would love to see any sporting event at Azteca, honestly. I mean, I really want to go see a U.S. soccer versus Mexico soccer game in Azteca, where they have the visitor section completely fenced in away from the Mexico supporters because, well, let's be honest, there have been bags of stuff that come out of your body thrown at people and players. It's not a very friendly place, but it's supposed to be one of the most insane atmospheres you'll ever see for a sporting event. The Chiefs just committed a penalty on a Chargers field goal attempt, giving the Chargers new life. Chargers actually missed the field goal attempt, but they will get the ball first in, I didn't see where they might, first in goal or first and 10 from inside the 20 for sure. So they just went to commercial after that penalty, and we'll see if the Chargers can put one in the end zone. This is, I wouldn't say it's a must-win game for the Chiefs, but if they don't win, they're only going to find themselves one game ahead of the Chargers. Chargers at 5-6 will find themselves one game back in the division. If you ask them with the inconsistent level of play that they've had all year, that they could be there the second weekend in November, I think they'd take that. The third weekend in November. I feel very confident that they would gladly accept that. I mean, they have just not been good for large portions of the season, and for them to come back. We talked about Tua Tagovailoa in the last segment. We didn't get much to the rest of the college football world. Andrew, I'm going to ask you this. I didn't prepare you for this, so I understand if you need a second, but who would your top four be if you were on the college football playoff committee right now?
LSU's definitely number one.
I agree.
Number two, Clemson, I would probably put at number three. Number two, I think, would still be Ohio State.
It has to. I mean, as far as just results on the season, it's LSU and Ohio State, and then there's a pretty significant gap. Even though Clemson is undefeated, that North Carolina game is going to haunt them as far as perception goes. But so you've got LSU 1, Ohio State 2, Clemson 3. Who's your fourth best team?
I think it's Georgia. I think so. But I think at the end of the season, let's say Georgia inevitably loses to LSU in the SEC title game.
Sure.
I think that then the winner of the Pac-12 gets in as long as they only have one loss.
Over a one-loss Oklahoma team, should they win the Big 12? I'm just asking because I think you're right. I agree with you. Right now, I would even go as far as to say is I would have Oregon at 4 right now. I would have Oregon 4, probably Georgia 5 and Alabama 6, then Oklahoma at 7, with Oklahoma having the ability to jump both of them should they win the Big 12, and neither Bama, who is probably not going to represent the SEC West, or Georgia not win the SEC, I think Oklahoma would jump both of them with a conference victory. But Oregon's lone loss of the season is a game where they controlled the game for about 58 and a half minutes. And they had a letdown. And they lost a game. A loss is a loss. I'm just saying, that's fine. They lost to a very good Auburn team. And they went conservative too early. That's legitimately what they did. And that's the downfall of a lot of teams. And that can be the difference between a national title caliber team and just a conference title caliber team. That could literally, that type of coaching can be the difference. But to me, you have to stay up late to watch Oregon sometimes. But if you watch them, that offense hums. That defense is better than you think it is out in the Pac-12. And I would say don't sleep on Utah, but man, that loss to USC is bad. I mean, real bad. Here's another one I want y'all to think about. When Alabama ultimately finishes their season, they're going to have one win over a ranked opponent. Should they beat Auburn? One win over a ranked opponent. Now, it's not their fault that Mississippi State's no good this year and Ole Miss is bad and Arkansas is Rutgers of the South. I heard someone on Twitter call it Redneck Rutgers the other day. It's a pretty good name for it. It's not their fault that Texas A&M plays the toughest schedule in the country and is going to lose five games as a result of it, even though I think they're a four- or five-loss team regardless of their schedule. But it's not their fault that A&M's doesn't get too many patsies, so they're only a three-loss, ranked in the top 20-type team. It's not Bama's fault, but it is their fault that their best out-of-conference game is Duke. And Nick Saban can say, well, no one wants to play us. All he wants to. It's not that no one wants to play you. No one wants to play you by your rules, Nick. No one wants to travel across the country to go play in Atlanta where you're going to have a 75-25 split of the fans and basically have a home game. Oh, and let's not forget, half of those 25% of the opposing fans are going to be from other SEC schools, so they're going to root on their SEC brethren anyway. So you get 85% of the stadium? No, play me in a home and home. Now, Alabama has gotten away from that in the future. They're going to play a home and home with Texas. I think they have one scheduled. They have another one scheduled, like Ohio State or Michigan or something like that. Another good one. So they're getting away from that. But this is the bed that Alabama's made. And to me, you can use your eye test all you want to. But especially now that Tua is done for the season, which the committee is supposed to take that stuff into account, there's almost no way Alabama can make the playoff in my eyes. Almost no way. Now, a lot of things can happen. Clemson could lose if they get a rematch with North Carolina in the ACC championship game or whoever they play. They lose that game. Clemson can't lose a game and get in, regardless of being returning national champions. That can't happen. Oklahoma could lose in a rematch to Baylor in the Big 12 championship game. There's also a really convoluted way that an undeserving Texas team could backdoor their way into the Big 12 championship game. Should they beat Oklahoma in a rematch, Oklahoma's done. If Oregon and Utah continue to be one-loss teams and meet in the Pac-12 title, which Oregon clinched their spot. I don't know that Utah has clinched theirs yet, but that's the crash course we're on. The winner of that's going to have a good shot and a good claim to get in. I don't know. I'm with you, though. I mean, LSU's my clear number one.
They could lose a game for me.
They can lose any game that's not the SEC championship to me.
I think they could lose if they go undefeated into the SEC championship game and lose a very tight game to Georgia.
Yeah, I could see them still getting in. I could see them still getting in that situation. Their one loss would be on a neutral field to another playoff caliber team. I could see how they would get in. To me, they shouldn't get in that situation, but I can see how they would get in that situation. to me, the conference championship games are playoff games in their own right. I'm not saying you should only take conference champions. If a year like this year where the Big 12 and the Pac-12 just aren't very good, or even where the ACC is terrible and Clemson loses a game, I get not taking those people. In that case, yeah, Ohio State and Penn – well, not, if Penn State were to beat Ohio State this weekend and then Ohio State went out and then Penn State win the Big Ten, I could see a situation where both of them get in. Same thing you just described with LSU-Georgia. I can see where they both get in. I can see a situation where LSU wins out, and Alabama gets in with that being their only loss. I'm telling you right now, people are going to say, well, that was a one-possession game, even though LSU gave up a meaningless touchdown with like a minute 10 left, where for some reason they were playing cover one man-to-man on the outside and let themselves get beat for an 85-yard touchdown, which shouldn't ever happen. That game was never in doubt. LSU controlled that game from start to finish. That could have easily been a 3-touchdown game as much as it was a 5-point game or whatever it ended up being. So, yeah, I could see all that stuff. The thing about this year is someone, if not a lot of people, are going to be very mad. The time has come. It needs to be 8 teams. And no, it doesn't need to default to conference champions. Give me the best 8. If that means, as much as it makes me sick, if that means 4 SEC teams get in, that's fine. But I'll say this. Judge the teams on their merit. Because I can tell you right now, if we were playing an 8-team playoff, yeah, I could see you can make the cases to me for Georgia, LSU, and Alabama. But if LSU were to, say, blow the doors off Georgia in the SEC championship game, take them out, get them out of my playoff, you can make the case for that, and I could see it. But don't give me any of this Florida or Auburn stuff. Don't say it. Florida's offense is atrocious. Georgia, their offense has looked really uninspired at times. Auburn, their offense is... Bo Nix is just a freshman. I want to say it's bad, but Bo Nix has had some bright spots. If they could get the running game going more consistently, that'd actually be probably a pretty good offense. It's a young offense. Do you think Auburn has a decision to make with Gus Malzahn on this year?
I don't think they do, but I think a lot of Auburn fans think they do, if that makes any sense.
No, it makes tons. I mean, look, Auburn's offense was worth anything. They probably beat Georgia this weekend. They probably do. I mean, Auburn is a 3-loss team at this point, probably going to lose to Bama in the closer to the season. Is 8-4 good enough? Gus Malzahn was a guy whose seat was hot coming into the season. Hot might be a stretch. There were some inclinations that it might be warm coming into the season. Would I fire Gus Malzahn? Absolutely not. But Auburn is in a really weird position where they think they're a little different than they actually are. And I think they could make a rash decision and let Gus Malzahn go. And unless Urban Meyer is the guy that they go after, that's a really bad decision. I don't know that Urban Meyer would take the Auburn job. I think he wants USC, which USC reportedly won't hire him. If Lincoln Riley were the Dallas Cowboys head coach this time next year, I can see Urban Meyer being the Oklahoma head coach. If the unthinkable happened at Texas where some fans are starting to call for Tom Herman, I could see them going after Urban Meyer. I don't know that he wants to go live in Auburn, Alabama and do all the SEC stuff again. He's won the SEC. He's won national titles. I don't know. When we come back, we will talk about where the NFL refs go from here now that they still can't get pass interference right. This is SB Nation Radio.
You're listening to The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation Radio.
And on SBNationRadio.com.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
This hour of SB Nation Radio has been presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Craig Koshkin sitting in on a Monday night here in SB Nation at the SB Nation Radio Studios. O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios? Yeah, that's what it is. O'Reilly.
You got it.
I'm a fill-in. Although it's been the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios for 2 years now or so, so I should know these things. But so Andrew and I were sitting in before we came in, and we were sitting with Alex Gold, who will be on from 10 to 1 a.m. coming up after I leave these airwaves. And he was talking about his allergy to shrimp, and then some shrimp popped on the screen, and he was like, man, that looks really good. And I knew immediately it was an Applebee's commercial. Like, I hadn't seen it before. I just knew it. I go, Alex, what is wrong with you? That looks terrible. It's Applebee's. And that made me raise the question to Andrew, is there a worse chain restaurant than Applebee's?
Not that I've been to.
I mean, not fast food. Fast food doesn't count. It's a totally different deal. There, you can kind of expect some bad stuff. But is there one worse? And Andrew raised another point. People who put Applebee's and Chili's in the same box, y'all got problems. We're going to talk about that on the other side of the hour. Hour one down. Thanks for spending time with me here. I'm enjoying it. This is SB Nation Radio.